When I grow up, I'm going to have lots of kids. I will name my first child Alexander, meaning he who protects men. I want to have so many children. I want to have 22 kids, but I have to talk to my husband first. This came from my 11-year-old self, written in a journal that my mom gave me only a few years ago. It worked in my heart the realization that God had been preparing me for what I would become my entire life. It has humbled me many times to read through my desire to be a mother to many. No, I didn't have a boy and name him Alexander, but I did name my firstborn daughter Lexis, which has the exact same meaning. I really can never doubt how God intended to use me. Rachel told me the theme of this session was, "Is it worth it?" Of course, high on the mountain, we can shout, "Yes, it's worth it," at the top of our lungs, singing in praise and happiness and utter relaxation and joy. But I have to be honest. There have been many times throughout my life, in the valleys, I have questioned myself. Is this really worth it? I have cried myself to sleep at night. I have prayed in anger, fear, and sorrow. I have worried for the future. I have so many times tried to take God's plan and make them my own. Oh, but I have indulged in the blessing and harvest times. And each time God brings me from the path of insecurity, I once again remember it is so, so worth it. My husband and I have 5 Hausman children right now. Allie is 18, Casey is 11, Lexi is 8, Silas is 7, and Brooklyn is 5. We are also fostering 3 Native American children. Zoe is 5, Tylee is 2, and Kylo is 1. We started fostering back in 2011 with the simple mindset of adoption. Our first license read one child under the age of 2. Before the month was over, God had worked a great deal in our hearts. Our license quickly read 6 children, 0 to 18 years of age. We realized we were not just meant to adopt, but foster. The need in our community was great. We also knew that with each phone call we received, it was given to us by God, and we felt responsible to accept. Our first long-term placement was hard. 3-year-old girl and 2-year-old red-headed boy with the attitude to go with it. We had a roller coaster of a year. The 3-year-old was given to a biological aunt after 14 months in our home, and the boy went to live with his brother after 16 months in our home. That was 5 years ago, and to this day, we are well remembered in their minds. Not because of the food we gave them or the toys we bought them, not because of their cool rooms or family vacations, but because of Jesus. This cute little girl still refuses to eat dinner at night without praying for it. She has taught all 8 of her older brothers to also wait until she has thanked God for her food. So you ask me, is it worth it? That little boy still refers to my husband as Joel Dad, because he taught him about Jesus. He was eventually adopted, and his mother contacted me a couple years ago to thank me. She told me this adorable little boy had brought their family back to church after many years of not attending, because we simply taught him about God. So you ask me, is it worth it? As a foster parent, you never forget the moment you receive the call. I wasn't ready. I literally could not have been less ready. We had just sold our house, everything was packed, and we were days away from moving. We were supposed to be off of the call list, yet they called us anyways. And we had agreed, if we got the call, it was for us. This was seriously stretching my faith. But we took it. 2 blonde-haired, blue-eyed babies waltzed into our lives that day, scared, sick, and severely behind. Baby B was 4 days under 1 year old, and Mr. Blue Eyes was just barely 2. Neither one of them would move if a male came into the room. They were stricken with fear. We were told that Dad would scream in their face and shake their cribs if they cried. It took 3 months for Baby B to even let Joel hold her. We knew this was going to be a long, hard road with lots of healing to be done. Birth mom had visits while Dad had a restraining order on him. He left town and wouldn't return for 19 months. The mother and I became very close friends, and shortly after the children were placed in our home, she wished to relinquish her rights and allow us to adopt. That's when Dad came back into the picture. A strong drug user and extremely violent, he demanded visits with these children. After 19 months of no contact, my mother's heart dropped. Visits were harsh. They peeled these children off of me as they clung to my clothes, screaming, "Mommy." We reverted back to the nightmares, the talking to ourselves, the hitting, the accidents, the meltdowns. I had no voice. They had no voice. I was continually told this was in the best interest of these children. I was told they would go home with him. These were the moments I couldn't bring myself to agree it was anywhere near worth it. I doubted God. And then he spoke to me. Jeremiah 29:11-13. "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Then shall ye call upon me, and ye shall go and pray unto me, and I will hear. And ye shall seek me and find me, when ye shall search for me with all your heart." It drew me back to him. Nothing could stray me from knowing he had their best interest at heart. He had my best interest at heart. Mark 11:24 became my motto for 3 very long months. "Therefore I say unto you, what things soever ye desire, when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them." And I have them. My little blonde-haired, blue-eyed babies now hold my last name, and they sit right there next to their old mama. So you ask me, is it worth it? Was it worth the hurt, the sleepless nights, the trembling fear? Was it worth feeling helpless, feeling undeserving? As I hold my dear children daily, it is, oh, so worth it. But behind the lives of these children, there is still one relationship I have not let go of, their biological mother. She still fights for her life, with nowhere and no one to turn to. I reach out whenever I can, but I am only one person. Who will help her? She is just ending her 4th round of treatment through pre-release at the age of 26. She wants to get it right this time. Will you please pray for Jordan? There is one more story I want to share with you. This sweet 2-year-old little girl stepped into our lives one early morning. She was filthy, smelled terrible, and repeated everything you said. But there was something about her I just loved. And then I met her mother, Ruth. We had an instant connection, one I wasn't expecting since I was white and she was half Native American, half Mexican. The little girl had her first visit, and like every other child in my home, she ran out to greet me by saying, "Mommy." I quickly apologized to the mother, and she embraced me like no other. "You are her mother right now. She loves you. Thank you. Thank you for taking care of my little girl while I can't. I promise I will get better, and I will be her mommy again soon." I was floored. No mother had ever spoken to me that way, and I believed her. The next couple of months were amazing. Visits were good. Court was good. I was even allowed to do visits with Ruth alone outside of the department. We went to the park, to the fair, to church. It was perfect. Ruth was due to have her little girl home by Christmas, and I couldn't have been happier. We had many conversations about Christ and how he was the only one she could turn to for sobriety and trust. But being a foster parent, my job is to protect the child. So it's a hard line for me to draw when dealing with these mamas because they also need someone to protect them. These governmental agencies just give them a checklist when really what they need is support or a friend or God. I could only reach out so far in my boundaries as a foster parent. In late August, Ruth went in for emergency appendix surgery. It was a turn for the worst since there was no alternative but to give her pain medication. That was her one major hurdle. I stepped up my game in fear that she would relapse. Ruth struggled but promised me she was fine. She had a birthday party to attend on the night of September 4th. It was for a friend we all knew was a bad influence. I begged her to stay home. She insisted she was fine. I remember sending her a video of her daughter telling her goodnight. I captioned the video with, "Maybe this can be the reason you stay home tonight." She never replied. I woke up the next morning to a sad news report. I thought to myself, this is the perfect kind of thing to share with Ruth about being in the wrong place when you know better. I looked at my phone and saw that I had 6 missed calls from the CPS department. I called the worker back, and she made me sit down. My sweet little girl's mom had been the one in the news report. My dear Ruth had been murdered at that birthday party. I was shattered. I was devastated. Weeks passed, and one of the supervisors called me. She told me not only had Ruth's phone been open to the messages from me that night, but that her drug screen came back completely clean. Not even a trace of alcohol had been in her system that night. Until I get to heaven, I will never know if our God-given months of friendship had impacted her heart. I often hope she had accepted Christ as her Savior. Today is a day for me to share my passion and my prayer for you, with you, that there would rise up a people that would have a heart for these children. We can't just slap a Band-Aid on anymore. These mothers and these children need us at the forefront, speaking the gospel, praising their triumphs, and holding them up through thick and thin. For too long, we have turned away the single mothers and the hurting children and the suffering babies. The burden, the heartache, the sacrifice. Oh, but you ask me, is it worth it? The blessings, the smiles, the rewards. As I look at those six faces right there, I promise you, it's worth it. Soak in the sweet spirit of being a father to the fatherless. And I ask you to fervently seek in your heart, asking yourself, is it worth it?